Okay, let's start with our lecture verse. The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Well, it's good to see so many of you here today for our Festival of Remembrance, and a special welcome to so many of you who are here for the first time. Welcome to our monastery. And today, of course, celebrating this Festival of Remembrance, just a little bit of background. Most of you know this, but in most countries, Remembrance Day is observed on the 11th of November, tomorrow, to recall the end of First World War hostilities. The hostilities ended at the 11th hour on the 11th day of the 11th month of 1918, in accordance with the armistice that was signed by those at war. And in Commonwealth countries, although I'm not sure they're referred to as Commonwealth countries anymore that were formerly part of the British Empire, but it's not an empire anymore. We refer to them as the pink bits around the world, anyway, on the map. The tradition includes a 1 or 2 minute silence at the 11th hour on that day, tomorrow. And I always like to observe that if I can. Coming from Canada, of course, I grew up with that. As you know, in the United States and some other allied nations, the 11th of November was formerly known as Armistice Day. And now in our country, it was given a new name in 1954 at the end of the Korean War to honor all veterans. And as Buddhists, we celebrate this Festival of Remembrance for Veterans Day as a memorial for all those who have died serving our country and express gratitude to them and to all surviving veterans of war as well. And as Reverend Master Daishin mentioned in his dedication, in fact, we also hold today in loving memory all people, all beings, all animals, so many animals as well, who have perished and died in wars. And that is calligraphed on the memorial tablet that you see on the altar, that dedication for all who have died in wars throughout the world. So we honor their generosity of spirit in offering and risking their lives for our protection. And also it's a day, of course, of joining in the grief of course, the passing of so many of our relatives and loved ones, and the grief of all who might have lost beings or suffered as a result of wars. And thereby, as Buddhists, we enter into what Reverend Master Jiyu's teacher called the great grief, suffering being common to all beings. And so it's also a day of sharing in that grief. Now, I'd like to weave a thread of this theme of generosity of spirit through my talk a little bit, because I believe that when taken deeply into our own daily lives, this practice of generosity of spirit is what ennobles us as individuals and as peoples of this world. And it was so essential to the Buddhist teaching, the very first teaching that he gave to his disciples. And to my mind, generosity of spirit ultimately leads to peace of heart and mind and can promote peace in our world. And we may not always believe that, but to my mind, what we find works in our daily lives is ultimately what's going to work on a larger scale as well. So let's look at a few examples of this. I'd like to take up the invocation that we chanted today, the General Simha's questions to the Buddha. And this is an extraction. Reverend Helen wrote that for us and put it to music, which we greatly appreciate. And that those passages in the invocation are an extraction from a larger sutra, where General Simba, one a very renowned general at the time of the Buddha, has offered some questions to the Buddha. Sometimes the sutra is called Simha's Questions Concerning Annihilation, because his initial question has to do with some teachings that he heard. General Simha, being very famous apparently at his time, was a follower, a member of a Jain sect called the Nigantas. But he kept hearing about the Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha at the time, and distinguished people talking about the teaching of the Buddha, and he was drawn to it. But since he was a member of this Nigantha sect, he went to its chief, Nataputta, and approached him and said he'd like to visit Lord Gotama. That was his name before he became Shakyamuni Buddha. And see, because he's heard good things about him. And the chief of the Nigantas discouraged Simha from going and said, and this was not uncommon, many people had some strange ideas about what the Buddha was teaching, and it made me think when I was reading this through again about this business of misinformation or confused information that goes around. It goes way back. This is still happening. We all have to be careful of it. But it was commonly believed. So this particular teacher believed that discouraged General Simha because he said that. That you believe in actions according to moral merit, but Gotama denies the results of actions. He teaches the doctrine of non-action, and in this doctrine he trains his disciples and so on. Well, okay, so the general didn't go, but then he hears again from some other people whom he really respects about the really great things about the Buddhist teaching. So he goes to his master, his teacher again, and asks, and again he's discouraged from going. And again, the other teacher says, well, he's teaching annihilation and the contemptibleness of all things and so on and so forth, the doing away with the soul, the burning away of man's being, etc. And so, General Simha again says, okay, but it keeps happening. He keeps hearing, he's very drawn. So the third time he says, okay, I think I'll just go and listen to the Buddha. And I've got to find out, for myself. So he does go to one of the Buddha's gatherings, and he presents to the Buddha. And, this to me, again, speaking of generosity of spirit, shows both the Buddha's generosity, but also his skillfulness in training and in teaching people. The Buddha was not intending to set up a system of philosophy, a political movement, any sort of movement, actually, not even a religious movement, actually. He was really just teaching beings, individual people all over the place, how to, recognize their karma, teaching them of things that he learned through his experience at the time of his enlightenment, and really how to find the causes of their suffering. And I find this very interesting because he was able to talk to and to teach and have disciples of all backgrounds. He had kings and princes, outcasts, soldiers, generals, merchants, farmers, female, male, you name it. All these people came to him, and he was able to address them all. And when you read these sutras, you realize the extent of his kindness and skillful means, but also the extent of how he really always targeted the causes of suffering, and really wanting to help them out of compassion of his heart. He wasn't interested in just gathering certain kinds of people who had certain views, and I find that very, very inspiring. So this comes across somewhat also in this sutra. So the Blessed One, I'll read a little bit of this because it's, I think, really interesting. And so he doesn't sort of become defensive, again, very skillful. He says, there is a way, Simha, in which one who says so is speaking truly of me, the criticisms. On the other hand, Sima, there is a way in which one who says the opposite is also speaking truly of me. Listen, and I will tell you, I teach Simha the not doing of such actions as are unrighteous, either by deed or by word or by thought, in terms of the non-action that he's teaching. I teach the not bringing about of all those conditions of heart which are evil and not good. However, I teach Simha the doing of such actions as are righteous, by deed, by word, and by thought. I teach the bringing about of all those conditions of heart which are good and not evil. So, again, very skillfully addressing this. Yes, there's some truth to this, but this is what it means. Yes, there's truth to this, but this is what it means. I'd like to learn to be like that more. I teach Simha that all the conditions of heart which are evil and not good, unrighteous action by deed, by word, and by thought must be burnt away, because he was accused of burning away man's being, you know. In other words, misunderstanding of some of the terms that the Buddha was using. He who has freed himself, Simha, from all those conditions of heart which are evil and not good, he who has destroyed them as a palm tree which is rooted out so that they cannot grow up again, such a person has accomplished the eradication of self. So his teaching of letting go of this sense of a separate self, a selfish self, was sometimes misunderstood to mean that he was teaching some sort of nihilistic thing, an annihilation. So he's explaining to Simha, I proclaim, Simha, the annihilation of egotism, of lust, of ill will, of delusion. However, I do not proclaim the annihilation of forbearance, of love, of charity, and of truth. I deem, Simha, unrighteous actions contemptible, whether they be performed by deed or by word or by thought, but I deem virtue and righteousness praiseworthy. So that's addressing Simha's initial question. But now Simha wants to go further and asks something more, and this is what's reflected in our invocation. So Simha said, well, one doubt still lurks in my mind concerning the doctrine of the Blessed One. Will the Blessed One consent to clear the cloud away so that I may understand the Dharma as he teaches it? And the Tathagata, having given his consent, Simha continued, I am a soldier, O Blessed One, and am appointed by the king to enforce his laws and to wage his wars. Does the Tathagata, who teaches kindness without end and compassion with all sufferers, permit the punishment of the criminal? And further, does the Tathagata declare that it is wrong to go to war for the protection of our homes, our wives, our children, and our property? Does the Tathagata teach the doctrine of a complete self-surrender so that I should suffer the evildoer to do what he pleases and yield submissively to him who threatens to take by violence what is my own? Does the Tathagata maintain that all strife, including such warfare as is waged for a righteous cause, should be forbidden? A question that many of us have, right? Many people have nowadays. A question also that Reverend Master Jiyu had when she went to the Far East to enter monastic life and to more deeply practice the Dharma. If you've read her diary in The Wild White Goose, you remember that she went with the question after having lived through destruction and bombings in England as a teenager. You know, why do people do these things to each other? Why? How does this evil come about? Why do we treat each other this way? And eventually she began to realize that it was the wrong question that she was asking, that she needed to be asking the question of, why am I the way I am? What are the causes of my own greed, anger, and delusion? How am I manifesting those things? How can I do something about myself? Well, in this case, the Buddha replied, he who deserves punishment must be punished, and he who is worthy of favor must be favored. Yet at the same time, he teaches to do no injury to any living being, but to be full of love and kindness. These injunctions are not contradictory, For whosoever must be punished for the crimes which he has committed suffers his injury not through the ill will of the judge, but on account of his evil doing. His own acts have brought upon him the injury that the law inflicts. When a magistrate punishes, let him not harbor hatred in his breast. Yet a murderer, even if put to death, should consider that this is the fruit of his own act. As soon as this person will understand that the punishment will purify his soul, he will no longer lament his fate, but rejoice at it, i.e. pointing with compassion to the person who has committed a serious criminal act. Accepting the consequences of it will free that person, regardless of the outcome. The Blessed One continued, "The Tathagata teaches that all warfare in which man tries to slay his brother is lamentable, but he does not teach that those who go to war in a righteous cause after having exhausted all means to preserve the peace are blameworthy. He must be blamed who is the cause of war. The Tathagata teaches a complete surrender of self, the small selfish self, but he does not teach a surrender of anything to those powers that are evil, be they men or gods or the elements of nature. Struggle must be, for all life is a struggle of some kind. But he that struggles should look to it, lest he struggle in the interest of self, of selfishness, against truth and righteousness." So again, this is what Reverend Helen put into our invocation. He who struggles in the interest of selfishness, so that he himself may be great or powerful or rich or famous, will have no reward. But he who struggles for righteousness and truth will have great reward, for even his defeat will be a victory. Self is not a fit vessel to receive any great success. Self is small and brittle, and its contents will soon be spilt for the benefit and perhaps also for the curse of others. Truth, however, is large enough to receive the yearnings and aspirations of all selves, and when the selves break like soap bubbles, their contents will be preserved, and in the truth they will lead a life everlasting. So the Buddha is pointing to a struggle much greater than simply that of military might. So he says to Simha, he who goes to battle, even though it be for a righteous cause, must be prepared to be slain by his enemies, for that is the destiny of warriors. And should his fate overtake him, he has no reason for complaint. But he who is victorious should remember the instability of earthly things. His success may be great, but be it ever so great, the wheel of fortune may turn again and bring him down into the dust. However, if he moderates himself, and extinguishing all hatred in his heart, lifts his downtrodden adversary up and says to him, "Come now and make peace, and let us be brothers," he will gain a victory that is not a transient success, for its fruits will remain forever. Great is a successful general, O Simha, but he who has conquered self or selfishness is the greater victor. So, one beautiful teaching of the Buddha, and always makes me want to cry when I read that. So I'm going to repeat that. However, if he moderates himself and extinguishing all hatred in his heart, lifts his downtrodden adversary up and says to him, "Come now and make peace and let us be brothers," he will gain a victory that is not a transient success. So he goes on to say, the doctrine of the conquest of self, O Simha, is not taught to destroy the souls of men, but to preserve them. He who has conquered self is more fit to live, to be successful, and to gain victories than he who is the slave of self. He whose mind is free from the illusion of self will stand and not fall in that battle of life. He whose intentions are pure, of righteousness and justice, will meet with no failure, but be successful in his enterprises, and his success will endure. He who harbors in his heart love of truth will live and not die, for he has drunk the water of immortality. Struggle then, O general, courageously, and fight thy battles, your battles, vigorously, but be a soldier of truth, and the Tathagata will bless you. Very interesting. This is over 2,500 years ago. Very profound advice, isn't it? Yeah. Then, of course, General Sima is very much taken with the Buddha's teaching and realizes he's really glad he went to the Buddha. So he asks if he can take refuge with the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha and become his lay disciple. And the Buddha says, and again, this is another one of his examples of generosity of spirit. The Buddha says, consider first, Simha, what you're doing. It is becoming that persons of rank, like yourself, should do nothing without due consideration. In other words, this was a very famous person, very renowned. And so the Buddha's saying, be careful. He's not saying you can't be my disciple, but consider carefully before jumping in the effect it will have. And Simha's faith in the Blessed One, of course, increased as a result. He replied, had other teachers, Lord, succeeded in making me their disciple, they would carry around their banners through the whole city of Vaisali, shouting, Simha the General has become our disciple. For the second time, Lord, I take my refuge in you, in the Blessed One, in the Dharma, and the Sangha. May the Blessed One receive me from this day forth, while my life lasts as a disciple who has taken refuge in him, and so on. And then finally, he says to the Buddha, well, the Buddha knows that he has been a patron of the Nigantha sect of the Jains. And so the Buddha says, for a long time, Simha, offerings have been given to the Nigantas in your house. You should therefore deem it right also in the future to give them food when they come to you on their alms pilgrimage. And Simha's heart was filled with joy. He said, I've been told, Lord, the Samana Gotama says, to me alone and to nobody else should gifts be given. My pupils alone and the pupils of no one else should receive offerings. But he realizes this is not true. Again, interesting how this false information gets around. But the Blessed One exhorts me to give also to the Nigantas. Well, Lord, we shall see what is seasonable. And for the third time, he takes refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So there you go. You can see the power of the Buddha's skillful means, his teaching on karma, and generosity of spirit there that promotes peace, because there were lots of differences in the various religious sects of India at the time, perhaps still around the world, and the Buddha was very respectful of them all, and didn't disparage them, and in fact encouraged the general to keep the peace and to be respectful to his former teachers as well. So I thought that was really interesting. Thanks for bearing with me as I read that, but I thought getting more of the context of this invocation and this teaching on Remembrance Day, remembering the Buddha's teaching in this regard, might be helpful to us. Well, generosity of spirit, it can seem a tall order sometimes when we're faced with meanness or we see a lot of miserliness around us, if that's happening. However, it's always important to remember that this is something that's always doable. If you just look at your daily life, what's going on in your own mind, personally I find there are many, many opportunities. All the little things that we encounter during the day, just being a little bit more patient with someone when we're in a hurry or we're feeling too busy or we're feeling a little annoyed with what they're doing or telling us about. Giving a little more with regard to our time and our energy when we can, giving to ourselves when we do need to take more care of ourselves. So many little things. There are many, many opportunities in every day to move in the direction of generosity of spirit. And I'm sure you all have seen this already, but it's good to take note of how this does create a different environment in our sangha, in our monastery, in our families, in our workplaces, in all our relationships, and with our animals, with our world, with nature itself. Not always doing the most convenient thing, but doing the thing that perhaps is more sustainable in the long run. Generosity of spirit. It really can permeate everything that you do. So just to promote that on this day of remembrance, that this is the way forward. Just as these people gave their lives, so many of them, we can give something of ourself, of our attachment to self, our clinging to the self, every day in little ways, and let those selfish desires, hatreds, angers, if they come up, confusions, let those die. Let that be our form of giving. Of course, Dogen emphasizes this also very strongly in his teaching on the Four Wisdoms. Of course, we quote this an awful lot, but one of Dogen's most significant teachings and my favorite's go-to teaching, and the Four Wisdoms that he teaches being charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy. The means that we have of helping others and representing the Bodhisattva's aspiration. Charity, generosity of spirit. Of course, giving what we can materially, but giving just in terms of kindness, in terms of our attitude towards other things and each other. Tenderness, yeah. Speaking to others whilst thinking that one loves all living things as if they were one's own children may seem a very tall order sometimes, but even just being still and not reacting or not perhaps giving way to feelings of anger or annoyance or meanness or shutting others out completely. You don't have to be going around hugging everybody. That's not what it's about. But to be still and allow one's innate compassion, that sense of tenderness that's actually at the heart of all beings, to arise. Yeah, he says, Dogen, by praising those who exhibit virtue and feeling sorry for those who do not, our enemies become our friends, and they who are our friends have their friendship strengthened. This is all through the power of tenderness. And he's referring in particular to tenderness with regard to speech. So just watching our speech a little and what's behind it, so important. Of course, benevolence, finding kind and skillful ways of being of benefit to others in everything we do, in the work that we do. As we often say, all work is the work of a Buddha. And no matter what your job is, whether it's working on the highways, gardening, being a doctor, a politician, whatever it might be, cleaning toilets, whatever it is, cooking food, there you have an opportunity to practice benevolence in the way that you present your work, the way that you give yourself to the work and dedicating it for the benefit of others. It will affect the way that you work. It'll affect your attitude of mind and bring peace, actually. And then finally, sympathy. Dogen says, if one can identify oneself with that which is not oneself, one can understand the true meaning of sympathy. Sympathy does not distinguish between oneself and others. There are times when the self is infinite and times when this is true of others. Sympathy is as the sea in that it never refuses water from whatsoever source it may come. All waters may gather and form only one sea. One of the most beautiful teachings of Dogen for me. And to me, this is something that we can actually tap into and experience, particularly through meditation practice, where we can let go of the barriers, let go of the clinging, the annoyances, the attachment to our thoughts and emotions, and allow ourselves to enter that sea where we begin to see our oneness with all beings within all the differences that we have. I think this is the biggest thing for promoting peace, if that's what we'd like to do. Yeah. So there we have it, very much in the Buddhist teaching and in Dogen's teaching. And Well, finally, I'm going to end with something from which I, you forgive me because I've quoted these things before, from the Venerable Maha Gosananda, the Cambodian monk who passed away some years back, who was very influential in creating peace in Cambodia after the Khmer Rouge, the horrors of the Khmer Rouge War and so on, when so many people were killed, and of course many monastics were killed as well. Venerable Maha Gosananda had to flee to Thailand. He lost his entire family to the war, the killings, and yet he studied. He studied the ways of Gandhi. He studied practices of non-violent protest, and he then sort of rose up from the ashes and decided to start teaching. Went back to Cambodia, did these peace walks through the country before the war was even over. Very courageous, spreading loving kindness to everybody. You know, he was sometimes criticized for even talking to the enemy, but he said, you know, everybody's got the Buddha nature and they need loving kindness as much as anyone else. So, very commendable person. And here's a little passage from him in his little book called Step by Step that was published of some of his talks and essays. This is one on giving. He quotes here Jesus, actually. He says, Jesus said, "Whatsoever you have given to one of my brothers, you have given to me as well." He says, "Great beings maintain their mental balance by giving preference to the welfare of others, working to alleviate the suffering of others, feeling joy for the successes of others, and treating all beings equally. Great beings receive their pleasure in giving gifts. To avoid harming others, they practice the precepts. They practice non-indulgence in order to perfect their virtue. They practice meditation in order to see clearly what is good and what is not good for beings. Great beings constantly arouse their energy by keeping the welfare of others at heart. When they attain great courage through this exertion of energy, they become patient with others' faults. They do not deceive. They are unshakably committed to the welfare and happiness of others. With loving kindness, they always place the welfare of others before their own. With equanimity, they expect no reward. This is how they perfect all good states, beginning with giving." So we can be encouraged by a great being and tap into that great being that is within our own hearts. And I'll leave it at that for us to continue to practice as we reflect and remember and grieve together today. And we know what to do. Thank you for coming.